Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Spring is my favorite time to start a new workout routine. With the weather warming up, it feels easier to get into the rhythm of things. Whether you have 20 minutes or an hour for a Pilates class or outdoor guided walk, Peloton has everything you need to help you get going. Get a head start on summer with Peloton at onepeloton.com.
Hey everyone, this is DJ.
And this is Ish.
And this is Season 7 of Better Let Me Tell You.
Did it on my talk show before I came to Miami in Tampa, and then we were like, can we just do an actual segment all in ASMR on a local talk show?
Jesus.
And they let us. So we had the mics and we brought it up really close. And then Kendall, my co-host, love her. Her name's Kendall, by the way. She's Kendall, not from Miami, yeah.
But of course.
Yeah, but pero like. but not at all pero like. I think she's from Texas or something. And so we did the entire thing and we were just opening. And drinking water. This is really fun.
Well, then this is a great way to segue to say that today's guest,
yes,
that we're hanging out with is Alex Miranda.
Hi.
From
how are you?
Deco Drive.
Thank you.
And if I had to do this interview entirely like this, my throat would not make it.
I actually would enjoy it quite well. Quite well. It doesn't make that's not grammatically correct.
That's,
I would enjoy it a lot.
Well, it's okay that you're, it's not grammatically correct because you're on a show that's, you know, is called Hangueando. So definitely not something we're concerned with on this
Tune
show.
Tune in to Deco Drive weekdays at 7:30. We're live. Everybody thinks we're taped. Did you think we're taped? Everybody thinks we're taped.
No.
I thought Deco Drive was taped before I worked there.
You did?
But yeah, Deco Drive is live.
It's no, live, I know it's guys. Live. It's I live. Know it's. I know, the segments are taped.
The segments
Some.
Are taped.
Yeah. Some. Gonna be doing this the entire
this
time.
Is great. Like honestly, just go, you know, just do your thing, fuck it. Like
let's
just
have it.
let's drink our coffee together, just
Okay guys, you can't see it, but he just spilled,
I just spilled all of it over. And yet I didn't get any on me.
No,
it was all on the table,
on the table, and on the fancy mic,
on the mic. Well, the mic is fine. It's
wait, a little bit on your chin,
a little bit on your chin.
Yeah,
wow, different context. That was an inappropriate sentence. Anyway, so yeah, so we are here with Miami's own Alex Miranda.
Hi.
Straight from Deco Drive.
Yes.
Into your ears right now. Thank you so much for swinging by, man. I've been wanting to have you on for a minute.
I'm so flattered and all of that that you... Why am I still doing it?
Okay, I'm going to start talking at normal volume now.
I am very happy to be here. We've actually been chilling at Books and Books, which, you know, everybody in Miami knows is iconic, but yeah. We've been chilling here already for like 30 minutes, having our coffee.
I think that's why you're still doing it, right? Like, honestly, I always love to chat with a guest before we get into like the interview of it all. And it's so easy to chat with you. Like, honestly, like we just met and I
feel like I've known you forever.
Yeah, I feel like, but I feel like that's very indicative. And it's happened to me a couple of times where I'll talk to people who are, you know, like yourself, you're a Miami boy, who are from Miami. And there's a certain just shorthand that almost starts to take place where it's like, oh, I've never met you, but I know you.
Right.
I know where you, I know, I'm, and again, I don't know what area you grew up in. I don't know what school you went to. I don't know anything. I was going to ask you all those things, but
take a guess. Where do you think I grew up?
All right. See, my gut says either Kendall or Westchester.
Okay, Kendall.
Okay. Yeah,
Kendall.
Okay.
Which, you know, it's funny. I was talking to somebody about this just the other day, that what I think is interesting is that most people who grew up in Kendall, or say they grew up in Kendall, didn't really grow up in Kendall. Kendall's a very specific geographical area of the city. And a lot of people grew up in some other place called Sunset or like the Hammocks or, you know, whatever. But actually not technically Kendall.
Right.
And what I think of as Kendall is often West Kendall. And then what people think of as West Kendall is something entirely different. And so Kendall really is that area just west of Dateland, but not that much farther than that. And so, I grew up in quote unquote Kendall.
Yeah. So like, for you, Kendall is like from Dateland to like a little beyond the turnpike
to Chrome.
Chrome. Okay.
For me, Kendall is everything past Dateland going west, but it's not actually. But for me, that's what Kendall is in my head.
That's because a lot of times people will just say like, you know, oh, where'd you grow up, Kendall? And it's like you start talking to them, and it's like, well, no, you actually grew up kind of like in Sunset or South Miami or whatever. And I think Kendall, for whatever reason, has become this like catch-all.
It's a catch-all.
It has become a catch-all. Yeah. See, and now I'm pretty sure, I don't know, you're giving off, I think it's the hat, you know, private school vibes.
Not at all. Okay. Sunset.
Sunset, all right.
Where'd you go?
It's the hat, that's what it is. Southwest.
I'm currently growing my hair out. I've made a thing of it on Instagram.
I remember, I was going to bring it up. I was going to make this a whole segment on this interview, where it was, because as someone who's going bald, I need to be made to feel bad. So.
Oh my God. Your hair looks wonderful. But no, I'm taking my head off right now. I have the headphones. But I'm growing it out long. I've done this before when I was living in New York.
When you say
and
long,
I loved it.
Like,
you know what? I don't even know what the goal is yet. Okay. I'm going to decide along the way. But I'm just over the short hair at this point. I want to do something for me. Something that, you know, is just sort of fun for fun's sake. I've just essentially exited a 4-year-long mental health spiral. Now I am ready to live, be happy, enjoy myself, celebrate myself, and that starts with my hair.
Well, I mean, but and that makes sense. If we're just going chronologically, it's at the top of your body, so you know, you got to start at the top and work your way down.
Exactly.
Yes, absolutely.
It's gonna trickle down.
I'm here for it. I will support your logic.
Thank you.
Yes, but you know, you mentioned, you know, having fun, and I think one of the things, again, for those of us who are listening from Miami, I mean, we have listeners all across the country, but I think most recently, specifically, we've gotten to know you through Deco Drive, and you always look like you are having fun. And
I'm always having fun.
And I have to commend you for that, because I know people only see the finished product, right? They don't see the work that goes into it. And I know that sometimes the fun that people see is not always fun to create, so to speak, right? Yeah. I mean, insofar as like there's only so much improv you can do before you put something out on air, right? And one example that I always think of when I think of you, and this was probably about 2 years ago, I don't know what the hell was happening at Margaritaville in Fort Lauderdale. I think they had just launched the wave pool or something.
Wow, you just brought that segment back. That just went way deep in my memory. Oh, I love that.
And what I remember, of it is, you know, you were doing like a live package, type of thing, right? So you're there and you do talk to everybody about what it is and blah, blah, blah. And that part, you know, great. But what I'll never forget is, because I put myself in your shoes. Mm-hmm. I was like, okay, this man is about to boogie board in that wave thing on live TV.
Mm-hmm.
In my mind, I would be like, okay, first of all, how do I hold my stomach in while doing it? Number two.
Oh, I'm still doing all of that. I'm very much thinking about all
that. That's why you haven't breathed. you know, but also like, okay, I have to obviously, I don't want to suck at it, but I also can't be quote unquote good at it because it has to be entertaining. And then I have to get, like, there is so much balance and you made it look so damn effortless. Like,
thank you.
I really wanted to commend you. And again, I don't know even know how long ago that segment was, but the fact that it has stuck in my head.
That sounds about right. Yeah, about 2 years maybe.
Yeah. The fact that it stuck in my head, I think, speaks volumes about what you do overall with your segments.
I think for me, yes, I'm thinking about all those things. I'm always very vain. I'm like, you know, here's one thing. If you watch the show from now on, you will notice that in 9 out of 10 shots of me in a package, like where I actually have control as to where I'm sitting. Sitting. What am I saying? Oh, I like that word. Sitting.
Yes. We're creating words in this entire interview. That's the goal here.
Or standing. I'm typically camera right. That's because I like the left side of my face more than the right side of my face.
All right, Mariah.
And no, 100%. It's like an Ariana moment. And my photographer in the beginning would find it so ridiculous. You know, we love each other, but he would, you know, kind of fight me on it. But he just finally let go. And so he knows now that when he sets up the shot, I don't have to ask for it. He knows I'm sitting on the right. The celeb or the guest is sitting on the left. And whoops, I just hit the mic. Sorry about that. And, you know, the funny thing is those things only exist in our head, but they actually have a real world effect. If I am sitting on the left, you know, on camera left, I automatically, even though it's all in my head, feel...
Woo, like a motorcycle, yes.
Like a motorcycle.
Yes.
I already feel self-conscious, even though it's crazy. And so me feeling self-conscious is going to affect my performance because I will be thinking about something that is not keeping me in the present moment. And so... it's, you know, it's kind of like athletes with the socks that, you know, they can't clean.
The lucky socks.
Exactly.
Yeah.
All of it is ridiculous, yes, objectively, but it actually has a real world effect. So I've learned the longer that I've stayed in my industry to just not judge myself and just do the things that make me feel good, because at the end of the day, the whole story will end up being better.
Right.
If you kind of just give yourself that.
Well, but it makes, but again, psychologically, it makes sense, right? It's like if you feel good going into something, you're going to perform better, whatever perform means in that context, you know, even if it's giving a speech at work, right? If you go in thinking, shit, I look great today, right? Like, this is the cutest shirt I've ever bought or whatever.
Yeah.
You're going to just have that confidence that will then come across and everything will, you know, will lead through it. Also, I'm now going to keep an eye out whenever you fill in for one of the girls on Deco Drive. Yeah. If you're playing diva and making them switch your side of the desk.
No, if I could, I would, but I can't. So I only, you know, I sit when I fill in for Lynn, I sit camera right. That's the side that I've always, and this is my whole career. I'm not just saying Deco. This is like literally from day one. So I get to sit on the side that I like. When I fill in for Shireen, I sit on the other side. So I am always more self-conscious when I'm sitting on that side because I don't even, you'll see, and people have said,
you're almost facing away from Lynn, like at that point. Like,
no, seriously, I am, because you'll see me kind of psychologically turning my face in the totally wrong direction. It makes no sense. And when I stand at the green screen, when the girls toss to me and I'm in studio, you'll see that even though the graphic is camera right, I am cheating my face camera left. It makes no sense. And at one point, Lynn was like, Alex, turn the other way. It doesn't look good. And I'm like, I can't. I have to. It actually reminds me of the moment in Zoolander when he's like, you know.
Yeah, he can't turn left or whatever. Yeah.
I've always laughed at that. I love that movie. But as an adult, I laugh so hard because I'm like, oh, that's me. That's me. No, but back to the wave pool thing. That's actually a really great example of one of it's a good example of kind of how I approach my job at Deco Drive. I try to push myself always to do the one thing that I would regret if I were to have left that shoot, gone home, and thought back, man, wouldn't have been so much cooler if you, during the live, had actually, during live, jumped on the boogie board and then did the whole thing and, you know, all of that. I shoot for, to me, what would be the best thing, and I fail all the time. There's two approaches in this kind of work. You can shoot for the thing that you know is going to hit. It's going to be safe. You're not going to mess up. You're leaving little room for error. Mm-hmm. And then you have a consistent performance. There's a lot of value in that. That's not me, and that's never been me. I shoot for the wildest, craziest thing that I can possibly come up with within the parameters that I have. I
mean, of course.
My photographer will be like, look, we can't do that. That's too risky.
Right.
I'm always pushing. And if I can get to the point of being allowed to do something, I'll do it. But sometimes you get what I think is, you know, kind of fun TV, and sometimes you get really cringy moments. You get really embarrassing moments where I think back and I'm like, oh gosh, that was just awful, and people must be making fun of me. But my job, in my eyes, is to shoot for the best thing for the viewers. So I'm putting myself in some sort of humiliating position sometimes to entertain the viewers and to show the viewers what they could do if they came to this thing that I'm telling them about. I want to give them...
Your show, don't tell.
Yeah, I want to give them the best possible representation of the experience that they're considering doing at home. And if I show them the fun that they can have, then I've done my job.
Right. No, I mean, 100%. I think it's one of those, it's cliche as hell, but it's like, what is it? You only miss 100% of the shots you don't take.
Exactly.
So if you don't just put yourself out there, then you're, I mean, look, the cardinal sin of anybody doing what you do at the end of the day is being boring.
Yeah.
And if, you know, again, it's not to say that you always have to be a wacky guy, but entertain, you can be entertaining without being off the wall all the time, right?
Right.
And I think you strike that balance. And
I'm trying to strike that balance more.
Well, I think you do. So I'll just
thank
take
you.
Just take it.
taking the compliment.
Take the compliment. That's something we all need to do more often, by the way. I'm a big proponent of that. I will say this is apropos of nothing, but especially with women. Yes. I'm a big proponent of like, oh, you look really pretty today. And they're like, really? Because then I'm like, you can just say thank you.
I know.
And I think we're really bad at that. Why? Because gay men are essentially like women when it comes to taking compliments.
Yeah. Inherently, we feel unworthy because we were rejected.
We were othered.
As children and othered and told constantly in many... Oh, wait. Oops, my gosh. It's getting wild here.
You know, the ASMR is taking a whole other level now with him.
But in direct ways and subtle ways, and we were always given messaging to remind us that, yeah, we weren't fully really worthy or enough.
Right.
And so we're kind of trained to, yeah, reject the compliment because we feel inside that, yeah, I mean, we just need to be better. We always have to be better. It always has to be better in order to be enough.
Yeah.
And that's at least been the story of my life, just overcompensating, achieving, succeeding in whatever ways that I can in order to fill that glass. And the older that I've gotten, and the more I've started to analyze all of that, I'm doing that less and less. But one of the things that I'm doing is trying to accept a compliment, which, of course, I rejected when you gave it to me.
That's okay. I'll pay you another one later on. It'll be a quiz. I won't let you know when it's coming. But, you know, you talked about your entire career. And, you know, obviously, again, we just talked about you being a Miami boy, you know, from Kendall. But you studied in Boston.
Yes.
That's where you went. You studied journalism specifically.
Broadcast journalism. At Emerson College, which was my top choice school. I applied to 6 schools. I was very lucky, got into all of them. That one was the one that, for me, just felt right. Mm-hmm. And, you know, back then, I wasn't out yet. I also didn't know that I was gay yet. I knew that something was up. I've always felt different in one way or another, but I knew something was up. But
then you went to Boston and P-Town, and it was all figured out.
Right. Yeah. Boston is obviously such a gay-friendly city. But Emerson College, at least at that time, ranked as the number one friendliest to the LGBT community college in the United States.
Wow.
And so there must have been something about that that I had already felt comfortable with, even though I really was not aware yet.
Right.
And it was amazing. I loved Emerson. I mean, it was great. I got everything I wanted out of my 4 years in college. It was fantastic.
Well, I was looking at your background and your resume, and it seems like you even were, and I didn't jot this down, so please, but I think you even covered some stories while you were an intern.
I did, yeah.
There. I mean,
there was a horrible...
You were like on the ground.
Yeah, so I interned at the local... Funny enough, I interned at my current station's sister station in Boston.
It's the only other Sunbeam.
Yes.
Right? In the, like, I remember one time being in P-Town and watching the news and being like...
You're like, this is Channel 7.
That's the newsplex. Like, I don't know what these people with these weird-ass Boston accents are doing there, but that's the newsplex.
I know. It's so bizarre how full circle that is. But I interned at that station. I also worked as a production assistant at that station, so I was like a paid employee at one point too. And I don't remember if it was while I was an intern or a production assistant, but a horrible tragedy took place at our college. The scaffolding of a under construction dorm building, which I ended up living in after this happened, came crashing down onto a car right there on the street in front of it, and I believe three people had died. And I happened to be walking outside of my dorm room, which was just, I think, two buildings away, the moment after it happened.
Oh, so and you were just there.
I was right there. And I literally walked up to this scene without even knowing that anything had happened. I was not paying attention. And then I looked and I just see, what is this? There was no noise. There was no screaming. And so in real time, I was just kind of processing like, wait, hold on, car. And then all of a sudden, that's when the noise started. And then that's when the screaming started. And then the police weren't there yet. I mean, this had just happened.
Shit, you happened upon it, like, right... I mean,
right when it happened. Wow. I had just walked... I must have walked out of the door the moment after. And so I called the police. And then after I called the police, I called WHDH. And they said that they were hearing about something that had happened. And then they asked if I could get on the phone and just start describing the scene. So that was... definitely a first little bit of reporting. Really, really sad story.
Would you say that's, I mean, I hate to sound ghoulish, right? But like that type of tragedy, but would you say that was the moment where you kind of realized, oh shit, I can do this?
Yes and no. I think, you know, I went to school for broadcast journalism and I...
Right, but it's one thing to go to school. It's another thing to real world experience.
But while I was at Emerson, I interned not only at HDH there, but I also interned at the Today Show and I interned at CNBC and I did a lot of... I really wanted to figure out what I wanted to do. And through those 4 years in college, I learned that really, although I do like storytelling, even hard news, I prefer the more human, entertaining, fun,
okay, lifestyle.
Exactly, lifestyle, that sort of arena. And yes, I did learn how to report, and you have to, in order to be a great entertainment reporter, you have to be a great news reporter. It's all the same. I mean, storytelling is the same.
Right.
I'm actually
going to counter you for a minute on that. I actually think sometimes lifestyle reporting is harder, because I think that when you're reporting straight news, there's already an inherent element baked in of this is why you need to care. In the instance you were just talking about, this is something that somebody got hurt. This is now going to probably affect traffic. So right off the bat, there's a relatability or an inherent like, oh shit, I can touch base with that. Whereas with lifestyle, I think you really have to do the heavy lifting, because it's very easy for somebody, like I'll just use myself as an example. If right now you're going to do a piece with like one of the housewives of Miami, I'm not a housewives fan. So I literally, my first instinct will be like, I don't give a shit.
Yeah.
You have to make me care about that. And I think that's harder to do because you're already facing sort of a blockade. Whereas hard news, it's an easier path to entry. I think, I don't know if I'm making myself understandable.
I think yes and no. I think,
I'm not dismissing hard news, but I'm just saying, you know,
let's fight this.
You know what? Hard news sucks. They're horrible. They're lazy people.
I think there is an inherent, there is an automatic interest in, for example, if I sat down with Britney Spears, I mean, most people would want to see what would happen in that interview.
I expect to be invited, by the way, for that one.
Yeah. I'm bringing her on the podcast.
Don't joke about things that get me excited that aren't going to happen.
But they're just different. Like the how to tell a great story, I think just it is the same on both ends. You have to have the basics. You have to know the who, what, when, where, why. You know, all of that factors in the same. But in entertainment, or at least in what I do, because I kind of have my own little lane that I've created, I put a lot of myself in my stories. And so there is a responsibility there where, you know, you put yourself out there and I'm kind of almost making myself part of the fun in the story. And that's a whole other element, because you're combining storytelling with entertaining. I mean, entertainment is one thing, but entertaining is something else. And I'm out in the wild, wild west here, because I haven't learned that from anybody else. I'm just doing what I'm doing. Like every day I kind of feel something new out and I say, oh, did I like that? Did Deco respond to that? And then I you know, move forward. But my style at Deco has evolved since the beginning. I've certainly put more of myself in the stories as time has gone on. And then sometimes I kind of pull back a little. I'm like, don't make it all about you either. You know, make it fun, have the viewer care, bring them in, reel them in. But also it's like, they don't like you that much. Like, so just relax.
I'm going to count. They do like you that much. They do. If not, you wouldn't be on my show right now if that was not true. Because I'm not bringing somebody on who I don't care for.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, no, but you're right. I think that it's a balancing act. I myself, ironically, I'm about to say how I'm trying to balance that for myself, not make it about myself while talking about myself. So I'm being very meta right now. But
I love meta. But I'm very heady.
We were talking about that earlier.
I feel like on the show when I watch myself back, I definitely kind of. I mean, it's very much me. I mean, it's a part of me 100%. But I tend to kind of pull on my hedonistic, more kind of selfish, silly aspects of my personality, and I kind of use that because those are the funny things.
It's a reaction.
But outside of that, I'm also a very very heady, very abstract person. I'm also kind of quiet and like somewhat private.
We were just talking about how your weekend plan is to go to the new Dollar General. I mean,
yes,
that's
I'm very excited about that. I just found out. Do you want to tell people why?
Yes, about the Dollar General? I have no shame. It's because my unprepared ass, the batteries in this recorder were dead. And so I literally had to go to the Dollar General, which he didn't know existed, on the corner of Books and Books. And then I tell him I'll be back in less than 10 minutes and tell them how long it took me to get back.
4 minutes. I was shocked.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Spring is my favorite time to start a new workout routine. With the weather warming up, it feels easier to get into the rhythm of things. Whether you have 20 minutes or an hour for a Pilates class or outdoor guided walk, Peloton has everything you need to help you get going. Get a head start on summer with Peloton at onepeloton.com.
Thinking about Beyonce being the first black female to score number one on the country charts, and I was deep diving into that, and then you came back and I was like, I needed to learn more about Queen Bee. I thought I had 6 more minutes for this.
See, I under promise over deliver. That's how I roll,
honestly.
And since I already started on a bad foot with no fucking battery, then yes, that was definitely under promised. Absolutely under promised. So I wanted to talk about you know, a couple more things that you've done a lot. I mean, I have to say, I know you're younger than me, definitely. And yet I feel like you've probably lived more than I have, just in terms of your experience, right? Like you know, you did some hosting with HuffPost Live, OK TV, which as somebody who grew up going to the Virgin Megastore and looking at OK Magazine.
It was the TV spinoff of OK Magazine.
Because that's where they had all the pictures of the Spice Girls with their families. That's why I looked at OK Magazine.
Journalism.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know, I'm nothing if not hard hitting. But you also hosted your own show. Is that the one that you mentioned in Tampa, A-List Living with Alex?
So A-List Living with Alex was a franchise from OKTV.
Got it. Okay.
So it was a great, and the funny thing is I had pitched it all myself. It was very smart. But I would profile celebrity-friendly or celebrity experiences. So we would go to, you know, the top suite at whatever, you know, resort, or we would fly to the Bahamas and I would show people what the celebrities do. So really it was just a paid vacation every time.
Fun. You were trying to be the first gay Cuban Robin Leach, and I cannot fault you for that, sir.
I do a little bit of that on Deco. I love that. I mean, there's so many things. I have so many different interests, and so each job I've sort of found a way to incorporate a bit of those into them. Like, you know, we have obviously we do that on Deco, where I go to really sort of fabulous, you know, locations. I love that. I mean, but I've used my job. Here's my career hasn't been, I've never had a goal. I've never had a specific goal, like, oh, I want to be, you know, the head of the Today Show or something like
right,
that.
Right.
For me, my job has been the vehicle in which I have basically just moved through the elements of life that I have found interesting and that I've wanted to explore. Mm-hmm. So when I left OKTV, at that point, OKTV was very, very candy. I mean, it was really... The interviews were so short. I mean, everything was just fun, red carpet, right. Glitz, glam.
Yeah, and for those of you who don't know, okay, I mean, I know you all saw in your tía's bathroom, Hola. Yeah, it's the same thing. It's the same company.
Yeah. And I had so much fun. And so many of my career highs were there. I mean, I used to make appearances on the Wendy Williams Show.
I saw that, yes.
Multiple times. I would be on, you know that, well, speaking of Robin Leach, I would be on that show on VH1, The Fabulous Life Of, where, you know, it's like, you know.
You were a VH1 talking head.
Right? I was a VH1 talking head. I mean, these are the little idiot. These are the things I get excited about.
But that's
these
such a tiny fucking little, cool thing to put on your resume.
No, but also just to experience in life.
Yeah.
And so it's never been a specific goal that I've wanted to get to. It's just what's fun, what's interesting, what element of my own brain do I want to start, what muscle do I want to start working out? And that's what's moved me through all of these different things. And that's why, like, from OKTV, there was a hard movement to the right. HuffPost Live, we would do 30-minute, sometimes longer, uninterrupted conversations. Essentially, it was the podcast before the podcast. Right. And it would be on camera, though. And, you know, one, sure, would be a celebrity interview. And then the other would be about, you know, politics. And the other one would be about sexuality, and the other one would be about Hispanic representation, and you'd have multiple of these interviews a day. I mean, it was exhausting, but it was so much fun. And then from there, then I ended up doing, you know, some news anchoring in Tampa, and then from there I was like, okay, I need more excitement now. And so then I came to Deco. So it's every job has kind of been a reaction to the one before.
Okay.
And but then the funniest moment of my career was really, did you read about the reality dating show?
I'm actually so glad you brought that up, because I was trying to, I'm like, okay, how do I transition to it next? Because I was like listening
to all your cues.
I'll
bring it up myself.
And so bring it. Let's go. Let's talk about it.
It was so funny.
It was on CBS.
It was on CBS. And two of my new friends, Gable's friends here, somehow it came up in conversation, and I was like, well, we can watch it. And so we were at their house and we pulled it up.
How long had it been since you?
Oh my God, forever. It was a life moment to watch that back, because it just brought me so far back to another time in my life. But now there's been so much time in between, right, that I watched it, and it was the most beautiful thing, because you see the younger version of yourself and you're like, go you, congratulations, this is awesome. Yeah. And
listeners, for those who don't know, for those who don't know, so it was a show on CBS. It was called Three, and obviously step in and tell me if I got it completely wrong. It was three women. You were the host of the show.
Yes.
These three women were essentially looking for love,
right?
And you were there to host but also kind of be like a guide of sorts.
Yeah,
like a springboard, a sounding board for them, just so they're not talking into the ether.
I was 25 years old, so I was not equipped for that role at that time. I mean, I did a decent job with it. It was fine. But I would be much better at that today than I was back then. But it was a lot of fun. And so...
Okay, well, surprise. We're rebooting it. We're calling it Four. We're just adding another woman.
I've never heard that joke. That is so good.
That's why I brought you on here. That's the whole reason. We're just rebooting it. We're adding another woman, and yeah.
So it's been a lot of fun. I mean, in my first job, which was actually one of my favorites, if not my favorite, was Deco's been my favorite, but was a talk show in Tucson, and that was a dream come true as is. Like, every job has just been amazing. I haven't needed another one. Like, they've all been just great on their own. But then, yeah, at one point, either your network goes under or the show gets canceled, or you are ready to move on into another element of, you know, another aspect of your interests, and then you move to a different job. But they've all been great. I've been so lucky. It's been an incredible career. But really, the career has been just in tandem with the life is really what it's been.
Yep. It's interesting, because I was going to bring up the three, aside from telling you we're rebooting it, but... Just because I feel like you've...
Reboot it, please.
Hire me again. I'll do a better job.
Well, it's the only way it's getting off the ground is if I come prepared with a host. Like, I can't do that shit. Like, I'm not growing out my hair. But what I wanted to say is, you know, you were mentioning how, like, and this is going to, I may be taking words and rearranging them, but you know, like you're not, your career has not had like a quote unquote end goal, right?
Yeah.
But with three, you know, it was, I would think it was a challenging moment because it was, you know, something completely new you hadn't done before. Mm-hmm. It didn't go the way you would have wanted or anybody, right? Because I know that it was after, was it three airings? It went online, so it was streaming. So, mm-hmm. And I know you were young, but how did you handle that at that age? Because you're doing great. Like, clearly you've rebounded. But I think the lesson there, right, is that we're all going to stumble. And sometimes the stumbles is not us. Because you were just saying, you know, oh, yeah, I did a good enough job at 25. I would have done better now, blah, 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 this and that. But at the end of the day, it's not even about you, right? Yeah. It was a network decision. It's not, it could have been anybody in that hosting role. And the network said, hey, we're making this shift and that's it. How do you handle something like that? You know, or how did you handle it then and how would you handle it now, I guess, hindsight?
It is interesting because that job it's one of those jobs in my industry that, and these shows happen all the time. I mean, for every show that hits, there are 100 that don't. And that's the kind of show that if it hit, yeah, my career would have gone
in you'd still be doing
a
it,
totally
probably,
different
yeah.
direction. And, you know, maybe it would have been we would have had a little Chris Harrison moment or something. But I'm glad it didn't because that job really isn't my gift. I mean, it's just, I was more of a stand there and say, you know, welcome to, you know, it's just more of a traditional host role. But if you watch me on Deco, you know that I'm not a, you know, I'm not a suit. I'm just not. Right. Like I'm here to do something else. I'm here to give something else.
Although you look great in your House of Suits.
Thank you.
Suit.
I will.
The other day.
Thanks for the shout out. I'm going to let them know.
Yes. Oh, I love them. They're the best. I've walked in and I've told them, I'm like, okay, I'm not doing anything right now because I need to lose like 40 pounds, but I'm coming back here. Like, this is gorgeous.
Yeah. I love that place. But what ended up being, so when the show got canceled, people were like, oh, you must be so sad. And I was like, I'm great. What are you talking about? I'm 25. I just hosted a national primetime reality dating show. This is my second job. I achieved every dream I ever had 2 years into my career. So for me, it was wonderful. And then, you know, they paid you for a whole year. I mean,
got paid either way. Yeah.
Yeah, you get you do 3 months of work, but it was also the easiest job that I ever had. So it was amazing. I loved it. But what was interesting about it was that after the show got canceled, then I had time and then, you know, I just kind of got with my agent and we were looking for what the next thing would be. Because it's like, what am I? Am I a local guy or am I a national guy? I mean, does this even make me a national person? The show got canceled. It's only aired a few episodes. Right. But there was, looking back, I had a bit of a depression that happened after it, but not because the show was canceled. And I didn't know what... Oh, the motorcycle's back. Here we go, guys.
It's just that whenever you get really emotional, I feel like you rev up. That's we're going to use that as shorthand moving forward, yeah.
But in hindsight, now at my age today, I realized that what happened there was... And sorry to get very... deep and
no, but
petty.
that's what we do here is like I want everybody to have fun, but I also want people to feel like this is the chance to talk about shit that you probably just aren't going to be asked anywhere else because we've got the time. Like the format of this is not 5 minutes, it's just talk about whatever's on your mind. So by all means.
So I realized that after doing a lot of self-work, and I did reference a major mental health spiral that took place about 4 years ago and lasted for about 4 years. But now I realize I ended up in this industry likely because of the insecurities that I had as a child from growing up gay and from feeling that sense of lack of worth, you know, rejection. And television provided a way to be seen, a way to be loved, a way to be liked, a way to be kind of safe, you know, because there's safety in popularity, right? And so after it's a fluke situation that your second job would be such a high profile job.
True.
And I remember thinking I had almost no motivation, and I've always been, as a kid, I was defined by my ambition. I was the morning announcements guy in middle school and in high school.
I could totally see that.
Yeah, I was class president in high school. I had a good GPA in high school. I got into the college that I wanted to get into. I was also the main anchor at all of those shows, you know, at Emerson College. I interned at the Today Show. It was just like the whole thing. And so after my second job, I was like, okay, I'm done. It just felt like a bubble popped. And I had zero ambition to continue on in my career. And I thought, well, this is odd. What do you mean? And so it took me a beat to be able to sort of convince myself to keep going and to then get my next job, which was OKTV. And from that point forward, I just felt like I was sort of filling air. I didn't know what my next move in life would be, so I just kept working, but I was finding it really hard to still want to do what I do. Mm-hmm. But now I realize it's because at the time I didn't realize that the reason why I ended up in the industry was because of those insecurities. And there's a moment, and it's an incredible moment in life where you actually achieve what you have this fantasy of achieving, and you realize that that ain't it, boo.
Be careful what you wish for.
That ain't it, boo. Your happiness is not about achievement. It's not about any of that. Your sense of peace, your sense of all of that comes from within. Oops. Oh my God, I'm getting so emotional.
He's knocking the mic over.
It comes from within yourself. But at the time, that's what had happened there. I finally got to that, weirdly enough, on a technicality, sort of, got to that precipice, got to the top of the mountain, and I saw down and I said, oh, this doesn't mean anything. Like, this isn't going to make me happy. This isn't going to make me feel whole. And that's a great lesson to learn young. Although I knew at the time something was up, but I didn't really fully learn it until later on, looking back.
Well, but at least you had the wherewithal to kind of be like, something's off. There are people who are just so blind to it or feel that they have to continue the path, right? Because, you know, there's something like you just said, you know, be careful what you wish for, you just might get it. But then there's also the element of like, all right, now you've achieved it. Now you're going to keep it. How are you going to stay at that level? Because what goes up must come down, right? So you're only as good as your last interview, as your last show, as your last acting gig, whatever, you know, whatever your profession is, your last Pulitzer, your last, whatever. That eventually, if that is what you are looking to sustain your happiness or to...
If your identity relies on that, that's a
problem.
You're in trouble.
Because that can go away.
Right. That can go away in a second. And so after doing all that self-work, my identity does not rely on any of this anymore. I do what I do to make people happy. I need a paycheck, right?
Right, right.
But I do what I do to make people happy, to put a smile on people's face, to get a giggle on a good day, to make people inspired to go and do something that's going to make their lives more fun, that's going to fill their weekend with something that they're going to build a memory over. Oh my gosh, I get so much satisfaction from that. I see that as a thing that I can give. It's like a service that I can give. And you know, it may seem sort of trivial, you know, the show is sort of silly and fun and camp and all of that. But for me, that's something that I take seriously. Mm-hmm. I take the silliness of the show very seriously because I feel like the silliness, actually provide some value for people.
Right, right. Yeah. So never besmirch the word camp on my show again. That's first of all, because camp is what we do. But on the topic of camp, you know, you've said many times, you know, what you want to do is kind of just bring a giggle and some enjoyment to people's day. Right? And you definitely do that. But I think, and we were talking about this before, you know, you also are using your platform in a way that, on the surface of it all, being in South Florida, may seem quote unquote frivolous or fluff piece, but when it, you know, your coverage of certain topics like LGBT related, mm-hmm. right, which I know is very near and dear to your heart as it is mine for obvious reasons.
Yeah.
The way that you do it, I think, is so important because it's anybody can stand on a street corner with a sign and be like, you know, rights now, da da da, mm-hmm. and that has value. That is fantastic. But what you do is you go into the community and you, again, this is why I said earlier that making lifestyle reporting is probably a little harder than news, right? Because than hard news. Because you have to figure out, okay, walking in, when I do this piece on our house hosted by, I don't know who hosted it, maybe it was Athena, the Dion, local drag queen, local iconic drag queen, because two Miami drag queens are on RuPaul's Drag Race and da-da. It's very easy to just on the surface of it be like, yeah, that's what he did. But it's like, no, but you did that in Miami during this political time where drag queens are being demonized at the restaurant that was like in the news for the drag brunch with people who have their respective platforms as well. And I think there's maybe a little bit more value, and I'm going to probably get shit for this, to doing something that way, because nobody likes to be preached to or talked down to. And I think that if you just present people as people and humanize when they're being demonized, I think there's more value to that. And I say that across the board, right? Like, so any story that you do, it's not just about, and again, on surface level, yes, it is, but it's not. If you're really paying attention, which most people don't, but
yeah, I'm intentionally not intentional. That's my approach to life. My approach
that's a
t-shirt, to life,
by the way. And,
right. I'm intentionally not intentional, because if I'm not being intentional, what I'm doing is I'm just living my life as a good member of society,
right. Taxpayer,
living my life as is. Now, I say intentionally, not intentional, because in a world that wants to continue demonizing you and pushing you down and pulling you back into the closet, you have to be intentional about staying outside of the closet. Right. And my community is an amazing community. We are fantastic at entertainment. And so it fits entertainment reporting perfectly. And I always keep in mind the little, because I always think the older I get, the more I think back to when I was a little kid and what I needed. The world, you know, doesn't hold us the same way that we sort of need to be held. And I wish I had seen more people just living authentically. Not, you know, you don't have to be guns blazing all over the place, but just that the equality means just being represented in the same way as everybody else.
Right.
And not feeling othered. Oh my gosh. The amount of self-work I've had to do to undo the feeling of being other is immense. So I love telling LGBTQ stories on Deco Drive. They are so meaningful to me because I just know that they mean so much more to us when we see them, because we don't get that same amount of coverage. And so if it's not for me there, I'm granted, Deco Drive has always been.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, Daisy Deadpool used to have a segment on the show.
Absolutely. Like, yeah, but yeah. I very proudly hold that, you know, kind of, what's the word I'm looking for? You know, with the baton.
Yes. I was like, banner, it's a B word.
And I love telling my stories. The one story you brought up, Athena Dion, but there was one story that I did on Athena, who is the drag mother of our house in Wynwood. Yeah.
And of Morphine Love Dion currently on,
oh my gosh,
on,
yes,
RuPaul's Drag Race. Yeah.
And Maya on all Drag Race as well. But there was this story that I told, and I just had so much fun telling it, because I just told Athena's story as a person and also as a drag queen. And we talked about Athena as a kid. And that story, people don't know this, but I often edit my stories. If you see me in the story, I likely edited the story. But certain stories, I will come in early, I will stay late multiple days in a row, because for me they have to be perfect. I mean, there are some days, and I've never admitted this out loud, but there are some days that I actually stay in the edit bay. I mean, I have stayed in the edit bay. Guys, I get out of work at 8 p.m. That's when my shift is done. I have stayed in the edit bay. With the Athena story, I stayed in the edit bay until maybe 6 a.m. And I've done this actually multiple times in my career, where there's certain things that I just have to get right, and then I'll come in early and I'll also continue working on it, because all the edits have to be right. Everything has to be perfect. And because they mean so much to me. And yeah, I don't know where to add.
to add to that, but yes.
I was like, I didn't want to interrupt because I was like, you were. I could see you having the moment, right? Like of just reflecting on your career and what you do. And look, you know, as we wrap up, because I know I'm like, shit, it's actually a lot later than I thought it was, and I know you got to get to back to
the
studio.
Let's keep going.
I mean, I ain't got nothing else to do. So I'm here. If you're gonna call in sick, we'll hang out. But I think, again, it speaks to the care that you put into your work. And I've said this multiple times now throughout this interview, which is I think people, it's very easy to look at what you do and dismiss it, right?
Yeah.
As, you know, oh, he's the entertainment guy. He's the guy who does the fluff piece, the little, you know, oh, there's a new restaurant. Look how yummy it is, right? That dismissal, I think, doesn't understand the effort that has to go into making it look effortless, right? It's the swan, you know, mm-hmm. parable, right? Where it's like above water, it's all graceful and beautiful, and look at, but underneath, you're paddling like hell,
right?
And I think, you know, it just speaks to who you are as a person, that you put just as much care into that as somebody doing, you know, a piece on Israel and Gaza, right? Like I think, and yes, I'm not saying. It's as, you know, it's not the same level, but you got to treat your work with respect, regardless of what you're doing.
Yeah, I take my work very seriously. I everything has its place. I mean, obviously, entertainment has its place. What I do has its place. I mean, it's not, you know, everything has its level of importance. But for me, I take it very, very, very seriously. And I love it. And my stories I take very seriously, and that's why I edit them to no end, because they have to be, for me, I want them to be the actual story that I want to tell. That's why I'm unsatisfied if it's not packaged in the right way, because just a few different edits make a whole different story. And
you're absolutely right. Well, I know you love your stories, but we love you. So thank you so much for coming by. You know, listeners, you can watch him. If you're local, you can watch him on Deco Drive. If you're not local, I'm sure you can just go on to WSBN.com and watch Deco Drive as well. I'm sure there's clips on there. And if not, follow him at I'm Alex Miranda on Instagram and follow his hair journey.
Follow my hair journey, guys. Stay tuned. So much coming up. And that's I'm Alex Miranda, not I am Alex Miranda. That is like the biggest confusion with anybody when I tell them that. It's letter I, letter M, Alex Miranda.
He'll be tagged on the Instagram when we post this either way. But okay, seriously, thank you so much for stopping by. Like, I'm not blowing smoke up your ass. Like, I've had a fucking blast. And
I'm glad to be too. This has been so fun.
I hope this is not the last time that we ever get to hang out, whether it be on mic, off mic, side mic.
Dollar General.
Well, okay, so Saturday at 12? Saturday?
Look, I'm going to be in Jamaica this weekend.
Okay, well, I'm going to be at the Sobe Wine and Food. So next weekend, we'll figure it out. All right.
The one vacation I take is when we can't hang out, because I'm actually going somewhere for once. Yes.
But again, man, thank you so much for stopping by.
Thank you. Okay, more coffee now.
Yeah.
Pero Let Me Tell You is co-hosted by Darian Borges and Ismael Liano, produced by Ismael Liano, and our theme, Pero Let Me Tell You Freestyle, is composed by Michelangelo Lomlaplex, the official gay guy. And don't forget to subscribe and leave us a review on iTunes.
Hey folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF Podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Welcome back to Two Judgy Girls. I'm Mary from the Bay.
And I'm Courtney from LA. TJG is the podcast where we spill all the tea on your favorite reality TV shows, celebrity gossip, and everything in between. We're here to bring you our unfiltered opinions, hilarious commentary, and plenty of laughs along the way.
We're two SDSU Delta Gamma sisters with a microphone and a whole lot of opinions. Each week, we dive headfirst into the wild world of reality television, from Bravo to all the trash TV you could want. We break down the drama, dissect the latest scandals, and share our thoughts on everything from the jaw-dropping moments to the embarrassing antics.
But that's not all. We're not here to just gossip. We're here to connect with you, the jurors, and share our love of all things pop culture. Whether we're dishing on the latest celebrity breakups, discussing our favorite guilty pleasure movies, or sharing embarrassing stories from our own lives, we promise to keep it real, keep it fun, and keep you coming back for more.
Come judge with us.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.